What are the formal rules to draw valid conclusions? What can be computed? How do we reason with uncertain information? Philosophers staked out some of the fundamental ideas of AI, but the leap to a formal science required a level of mathematical formalization in three fundamental areas: logic, computation, and probability. The idea of formal logic can be traced back to the philosophers of ancient Greece, but its mathematical development really began with the work of George Boole, who lived from 1815 to 1864, who worked out the details of propositional or Boolean logic. Boole, 1847. In 1879, Gottlob Frege, 1849 to 1925, extended Boole's logic to include objects and relations, creating the first-order logic that is used today. Alfred Tarski, who lived from 1902 to 1983, introduced a theory of reference that shows how to relate the objects in a logic to objects in the real world. The next step was to determine the limits of what could be done with logic and computation. The first non-trivial algorithm is thought to be Euclid's algorithm for computing greatest common divisors. The word algorithm and the idea of studying them comes from Al-Khwarizmi, a Persian mathematician of the 9th century, whose writings also introduced Arabic numerals and algebra to Europe. Boole and others discussed algorithms for logical deduction, and by the late 19th century, efforts were underway to formalize general mathematical reasoning as logical deduction. In 1930, Kurt Gödel, 1906 to 1978, showed that there exists an effective procedure to prove any true statement in the first-order logic of Frege and Russell. But that first-order logic could not capture the principle of mathematical induction needed to characterize the natural numbers. In 1931, Gödel showed that limits on deduction do exist. His incompleteness theorem showed that in any formal theory as strong as piano arithmetic, the elementary theory of natural numbers, there are true statements that are undecidable in the sense that they have no proof within the theory. This fundamental result can also be interpreted as showing that some functions on the integers cannot be represented by an algorithm. That is, they cannot be computed. This motivated Alan Turing, who lived from 1912 to 1954, to try to characterize exactly which functions are computable, capable of being computed. This notion is actually slightly problematic, because the notion of a computation or effective procedure really cannot be given a formal definition. However, the Church-Turing thesis, which states that the Turing machine, Turing, 1936, is capable of computing any computable function, is generally accepted as providing a sufficient definition. Turing also showed that there were some functions that no Turing machine can compute. For example, no machine can tell in general whether a given program will return an answer on a given input or run forever. Although decidability and computability are important to an understanding of computation, the notion of tractability has had an even greater impact. Roughly speaking, a problem is called intractable if the time required to solve instances of the problem grows exponentially with the size of the instances. The distinction between polynomial and exponential growth in complexity was first emphasized in the mid-1960s, Cobham, 1964, Edmonds, 1965. It is important because exponential growth means that even moderately large instances cannot be solved in any reasonable time. Therefore, one should strive to divide the overall problem of generating intelligent behavior into tractable subproblems rather than intractable ones. How can one recognize an intractable problem? The theory of NP completeness pioneered by Stephen Cook, 1971, and Richard Karp, 1972, provides a method. Cook and Karp showed the existence of large classes of canonical combinatorial search and reasoning problems that are NP-complete. Any problem class to which the class of NP-complete problems can be reduced is likely to be intractable, although it has not been proved that NP-complete problems are necessarily intractable. Most theoreticians believe it. These results contrast with the optimism with which the popular press greeted the first computers, electronic superbrains, that were faster than Einstein. Despite the increasing speed of computers, careful use of resources will characterize intelligent systems. Put crudely, the world is an extremely large problem instance. Work in AI has helped explain why some instances of NP-complete problems are hard, yet others are easy. Cheeseman et al., 1991. Besides logic and computation, the third great contribution of mathematics to AI is the theory of probability. The Italian Girolamo Cardano, 1501-1576, first framed the idea of probability, describing it in terms of the possible outcomes of gambling events. In 1654, Blaise Pascal, 1623-1662, in a letter to Pierre Fermat, 1601-1665, showed how to predict the future of an unfinished gambling game and assign average payoffs to the gamblers. Probability quickly became an invaluable part of all the quantitative sciences, helping to deal with uncertain measurements and incomplete theories. James Bernoulli, 1654-1705, Pierre Laplace, 1749-1827, and others advanced the theory and introduced new statistical methods. Thomas Bayes, 1702-1761, who appears on the front cover of this book, proposed a rule for updating probabilities in the light of new evidence. Bayes' rule underlies most modern approaches to uncertain reasoning in AI systems. 1.2.3 Economics. How should we make decisions so as to maximize payoff? How should we do this when others may not go along? How should we do this when the payoff may be fair in the future? May be far in the future. The science of economics got its start in 1776, when Scottish philosopher Adam Smith, 1723-1790, published An Inquiry into the Nature and Causes of the Wealth of Nations. While the ancient Greeks and others had made contributions to economic thought, Smith was the first to treat it as a science, using the idea that economies can be thought of as consisting of individual agents maximizing their own economic well-being. Most people think of economics as being about money, but economists will say that they are really studying how people make choices that lead to preferred outcomes. When McDonald's offers a hamburger for a dollar, they are asserting that they would prefer the dollar and hoping that customers will prefer the hamburger. The mathematical treatment of preferred outcomes, or utility, was first formalized by Leon Walras, pronounced Valras, 1834-1910, and was improved by Frank Ramsey, 1931. And later by John von Neumann and Oscar Morgenstern in their book The Theory of Games and Economic Behavior, 1944. Decision theory, which combines probability theory with utility theory, provides a formal and complete framework for decisions, economic or otherwise, made under uncertainty. That is, in cases where probabilistic descriptions appropriately capture the decision-maker's environment. This is suitable for large economies, where each agent need pay no attention to the actions of other agents as individuals. For small economies, the situation is much more like a game. The actions of one player can significantly affect the utility of another, either positively or negatively. Von Neumann and Morgenstern's development of game theory, see also Luce and Riffa, 1957, included the surprising result that for some games, a rational agent should adopt policies that are, or at least appear to be, randomized. Unlike decision theory, game theory does not offer an unambiguous prescription for selecting actions. For the most part, economists did not address the third question listed above, namely, how to make rational decisions when payoffs from actions are not immediate, but instead result from several actions taken in sequence. This topic was pursued in the field of operations research, which emerged in World War II, from efforts in Britain to optimize radar installations, and later found civilian applications in complex management decisions. The work of Richard Bellman, 1957, formalized a class of sequential decision problems called Markov decision processes, which we study in chapters 17 and 21. Work in economics and operations research has contributed much to our notion of rational agents. Yet for many years, AI research developed along entirely separate paths. One reason was the apparent complexity of making rational decisions. The pioneering AI researcher Herbert Simon, 1916-2001, won the Nobel Prize in Economics in 1978 for his early work showing that models based on satisfying, making decisions that are good enough, rather than laboriously calculating an optimal decision, gave a better description of actual human behavior. Simon, 1947. Since the 1990s, there has been a resurgence of interest in decision-theoretic techniques for agent systems. Wellman, 1995. 1.2.4. Neuroscience. How do brains process information? Neuroscience is the study of the nervous system, particularly the brain. Although the exact way in which the brain enables thought is one of the great mysteries of science, the fact that it does enable thought has been appreciated for thousands of years because of the evidence that strong blows to the head can lead to mental incapacitation. It has also long been known that human brains are somewhat different. In about 335 BC, Aristotle wrote, "Of all the animals, man has the largest brain in proportion to his size." Still, it was not until the middle of the 18th century that the brain was widely recognized as the seat of consciousness. Before then, candidate locations included the heart and the spleen. Paul Broca's 1824-1880 study of aphasia, speech deficit in brain-damaged patients in 1861 demonstrated the existence of localized areas of the brain responsible for specific cognitive functions. In particular, he showed that speech production was localized to the portion of the left hemisphere now called Broca's area. By that time, it was known that the brain consisted of nerve cells or neurons. But it was not until 1873 that Camillo Golgi, 1843-1926, developed a staining technique allowing the observation of individual neurons in the brain. This technique was used by Santiago Ramon y Cajal, 1852-1934, in his pioneering studies of the brain's neuronal structures. Nicholas Reshevsky, 1936-1938, was the first to apply mathematical models to the study of the nervous system. Figure 1.2. The parts of a nerve cell or neuron. Each neuron consists of a cell body, or soma, that contains a cell nucleus. Branching out from the cell body are a number of fibers called dendrites, and a single long fiber called the axon. The axon stretches out for a long distance, much longer than the scale in this diagram indicates. Typically, an axon is 1 centimeter long, 100 times the diameter of the cell body, but can reach up to 1 meter. A neuron makes connections with 10 to 100,000 other neurons at junctions called synapses. Signals are propagated from neuron to neuron by a complicated electrochemical reaction. The signals control brain activity in the short term and also enable long-term changes in the connectivity of neurons. These mechanisms are thought to form the basis for learning in the brain. Most information processing goes on in the cerebral cortex, the outer layer of the brain. The basic organizational unit appears to be a column of tissue about 0.5 millimeters in diameter, containing about 20,000 neurons and extending the full depth of the cortex about 4 millimeters in humans. We now have some data on the mapping between areas of the brain and the parts of the body that they control, or from which they receive sensory input. Such mappings are able to change radically over the course of a few weeks, and some animals seem to have multiple maps. Moreover, we do not fully understand how other areas can take over functions when one area is damaged. There is almost no theory on how an individual memory is stored. The measurement of intact brain activity began in 1929 with the invention by Hans Berger of the electroencephalograph, EEG. The recent development of functional magnetic resonance imaging, fMRI, Ogawa et al., 1990, Cabeza and Nyberg, 2001, is giving neuroscientists unprecedentedly detailed images of brain activity, enabling measurements that correspond in interesting ways to ongoing cognitive processes. These are augmented by advances in single-cell recording of neuron activity. Individual neurons can be stimulated electrically, chemically, or even optically, Han and Boyden, 2007, allowing neuronal input-output relationships to be mapped. Despite these advances, we are still a long way from understanding how cognitive processes actually work. The truly amazing conclusion is that a collection of simple cells can lead to thought, action, and consciousness. Or, in the pithy words of John Searle, 1992, brains cause minds. Figure 1.3. A crude comparison of the raw computational resources available to the IBM BlueJeans supercomputer, a typical personal computer of 2008, and the human brain. The brain's numbers are essentially fixed, whereas the supercomputer's numbers have been increasing by a factor of 10 every 5 years or so, allowing it to achieve rough parity with the brain. The personal computer lags behind on all metrics except cycle time. Supercomputer. Computational units. 10 to the 4 CPUs. 10 to the 12 transistors. Supercomputer. Storage units. 10 to the 14 bits RAM. 10 to the 15 bits disk. Supercomputer. Cycle time. 10 to the negative 9 seconds. Supercomputer. Operations per second, 10 to the 15. Supercomputer, memory updates per second, 10 to the 14. Personal computer, computational units. 4 CPUs, 10 to the 9 transistors. Personal computer, storage units, 10 to the 11 bits RAM. Personal computer, storage units, 10 to the 13 bits disk. Personal computer, cycle time, 10 to the negative 9 seconds. Personal computer, operations per second, 10 to the 10. Personal computer, memory updates per second, 10 to the 10. Human brain, computational units, 10 to the 11 neurons. Human brain, storage units, 10 to the 11 neurons. Human brain, storage units, 10 to the 14 synapses. Human brain, cycle time, 10 to the negative 3 seconds. Human brain, operations per second, 10 to the 17. Human brain, memory updates per second, 10 to the 14. The only real alternative theory is mysticism, that minds operate in some mystical realm that is beyond physical science. Brains and digital computers have somewhat different properties. Figure 1.3 shows that computers have a cycle time that is a million times faster than a brain. The brain makes up for that with far more storage and interconnection than even a high-end personal computer, although the largest supercomputers have a capacity that is similar to the brain's. It should be noted, however, that the brain does not seem to use all of its neurons simultaneously. Futurists make much of these numbers, pointing to an approaching singularity, at which computers reach a superhuman level of performance. Vinci, 1993, Kurzweil, 2005. But the raw comparisons are not especially informative. Even with a computer of virtually unlimited capacity, we still would not know how to achieve the brain's level of intelligence. 1.2.5. Psychology. How do humans and animals think and act? The origins of scientific psychology are usually traced to the work of the German physicist Hermann von Helmholtz, 1821-1894, and his student Wilhelm Wundt, 1832-1920. Helmholtz applied the scientific method to the study of human vision, and his Handbook of Physiological Optics is even now described as the single most important treatise on the physics and physiology of human vision, Nalwa, 1993, page 15. In 1879, Wundt opened the first laboratory of experimental psychology at the University of Leipzig. Wundt insisted on carefully controlled experiments in which his workers would perform a perceptual or associative task while introspecting on their thought processes. The careful controls went a long way toward making psychology a science, but the subjective nature of the data made it unlikely that an experimenter would ever disconfirm his or her own theories. Biologists studying animal behavior, on the other hand, lacked introspective data and developed an objective methodology, as described by H.S. Jennings, 1906, in his influential work, Behavior of the Lower Organisms. Applying this viewpoint to humans, the behaviorism movement led by John Watson, 1879-1958, rejected any theory involving mental processes on the grounds that introspection could not provide reliable evidence. Behaviorists insisted on studying only objective measures of the percepts, or stimulus, given to an animal and its resulting actions, or response. Behaviorism discovered a lot about rats and pigeons, but had less success at understanding humans. Cognitive psychology, which views the brain as an information processing device, can be traced back at least to the works of William James, 1842-1910. Helmholtz also insisted that perception involved a form of unconscious logical inference. The cognitive viewpoint was largely eclipsed by behaviorism in the United States, but at Cambridge's Applied Psychology Unit, directed by Frederick Bartlett, 1886-1969, cognitive modeling was able to flourish. The Nature of Explanation by Bartlett's student and successor, Kenneth Craik, 1943, forcefully reestablished the legitimacy of such mental terms as beliefs and goals, arguing that they are just as scientific as, say, using pressure and temperature to talk about gases, despite their being made of molecules that have neither. Craik specified the three key steps of a knowledge-based agent. 1. The stimulus must be translated into an internal representation. 2. The representation is manipulated by cognitive processes to derive new internal representations. And three, these are in turn retranslated back into action. He clearly explained why this was